Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. It is September. It is the fall season. We are about to kick back into the regular programming season, so I am back. I'm going to be touching on some premieres and finales over the past couple of weeks that I've missed out on things, but I have been watching TV, just not a whole lot of it. So we'll start there. I'll do some news. I'll touch on a couple of big stories, some from this week, some from previous, and then I'll let you know what shows are gearing up for premieres this week, and especially because the summer season is wrapping up, which summer shows are having their finales. Okay, let's get started with some news. Okay, this week, Fox, not announced, but Howard Gordon, I think his name is, who was a producer for 24, I believe, announced that they are actively having discussions to bring the series 24 back to Fox. I'm sure we all know, whether we watch 24 or not, I did not, but I still know about this damn show because it's all everyone talked about for about 5 years. 24 aired on Fox for a whole bunch of seasons, starring Kiefer Sutherland. There was a TV movie. There was a reboot series with Kiefer Sutherland. Then there was a rebranding, like, Next Generation series, I want to say like 3 or 4 years ago, called 24 Legacy that starred Corey Hawkins. So this is an idea that I swear every year a story like this comes out where it's like, we're looking to bring back 24. We're looking to bring back Prison Break. We're looking to bring back Glee. You know, like these stories are constantly happening, and like whether this will ever happen, I don't know. But take with that what you will, that 24 may be coming back to Fox at some point. What else? Okay, so I talked a couple of episodes back, which at this point was months ago, that Manifest from NBC had been canceled, and Netflix and a bunch of other places were considering picking it up. Netflix initially passed. I did a whole spiel about how maybe Netflix was done saving broadcast shows. Well, after being one of the most watched programs on Netflix all summer, Netflix did decide to give a final season renewal to Manifest. So I don't watch the show. I do not know what it is really about. I watched the very first episode when it aired years ago on NBC and decided, like, I've seen too many versions of this show and I always get screwed by it. Like, I always will get really into a show, and then especially like a sci-fi, fantasy, supernatural, mystery, thriller kind of thing like this, and then either the reveal of what's going on sucks, or they cancel it before we ever get the reveal. So I'm not going to waste my time. But apparently everything is going to be wrapped up on Manifest. That season will be extra long. I think it's going to be 22 episodes, and that's going to be coming next year sometime. So if you watch Manifest, congratulations, your wish has been granted. Please keep in mind that Netflix did not do this because you wrote them letters or tweets. They did this because it made financial sense to them. Just so you know. And finally, again, Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, which had two seasons on NBC and was canceled at the end of this most recent broadcast season, was renewed for a final two-hour movie special that is going to air on the Roku channel along with the first two seasons of Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. And I believe that is currently filming, or at least set to start filming very soon. So you're probably going to get that movie by the end of the year. So it'll be for this Christmas. And that is going to be on Roku. So I always find it fascinating when these shows that like do not do well on linear television, but then get saved, quote unquote, in some way by a streamer. To me, it's always really fascinating which shows this is. Like Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist did not do well ever. Like I can't believe it got a second season, let alone this Christmas movie. So it must do well streaming. Like people don't care to watch shows live anymore at all, but they like to watch it on streaming. Manifest is a great example of that. Where like, I'm honest to God, I'm sure there are people, quite a few of them, who do not know this show was ever on NBC. They probably think it is a Netflix show because once the full seasons drop on Netflix, that's when you see it in the Netflix top 10 constantly. So it probably does make sense for Netflix to buy this to appease their fans, to build their content, to get people to continue to subscribe. And I'm sure that the producing company cut the fee to get more episodes because then they get more money. So I always find it interesting which shows survive, which shows get, like, Lucifer is another one. Its actual final season dropped, I think, last week on Netflix. That was another one that Fox canceled and then Netflix picked up. So, you know, with Zoe, I think is a very strange example because, like, the Roku channel does not actually have any of its own original TV programming. They bought Quibi's programming last year and dropped that over the summer. And maybe that went well. So now they're looking to, like, slowly build their own catalogs. Maybe the Roku channel will be the next place to kind of save these little watched broadcast series, kind of like Netflix used to be back in the day. I don't know. That'll be really cool, I think, going forward to see if that continues to happen with these streamers that are kind of building their catalog, the Roku channel being one. I'm going to talk about another one this week, Top Chef Family Style on Peacock. Maybe that's another one we might see these kind of like spinoffs or new shows or maybe saved shows from little watched networks or from networks that are already under the Universal umbrella, like NBC or USA Bravo, Sci-Fi, those kind of places. Like maybe they'll start to migrate over to Peacock to try to like build up their catalog of shows. But yeah, it's a weird, it's weird to me that this happens still. You know, if you go back and listen to that episode, I was not optimistic that Manifest was ever going to get picked up, and neither were they. Like, they went to Netflix. Netflix said, fuck off. And then after months of everyone watching it and it building its audience on Netflix, they were like, eh. And then also with, I'm sure, the production company, like I said, cutting the fee, it suddenly made sense. So now people are getting it. All right. Stay tuned for some recaps and some reviews, and I will talk to you on the flip side. So I'm just going to touch on some random things that I've watched. And the first I would like to talk about is, of course, the finale of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars Season 6. I've talked about this show so much on the podcast already, so I apologize to those of you who couldn't give a shit more. But if you have not watched it and you don't want to be spoiled, stop now. And skip ahead like a few minutes. But so the winner was revealed to be Kylie Sonique Love, who you may remember I was not too keen on in the first couple episodes. Not like I disliked her, but she just wasn't stepping the pussy up the way that I thought some other girls were. And this was a wild ass season in terms of eliminations and stuff like that. And the top four were Eureka, Ginger Minj, Raja O'Hara, and Kylie Sonique Love. And honestly, I probably only would have ever predicted two of those four at the beginning of the season. Eureka and Ginger being those two. I did not anticipate Raja O'Hara going very far at all. Although I did change my opinion a bit after the first couple episodes. So if you want to go back and listen to that episode of the podcast, feel free. I did not see Kylie going very far. And based on early episodes, I thought she'd be kind of like a middle of the road elimination, but then she really stepped it up and she had some amazing performances. She did very well in the acting challenge for the American Horror Story episode. She also did very well in the Snatch Game, which I thought she should have won. She did not, but she played Dolly Parton very, very well. She did well in the Drag Tots episode. I also thought she should have won that. And then she went into the finale with one win. And she also won that lip sync, so that was in her favor. Raja O'Hara had two wins. Ginger Minj had two wins and two lip sync wins. I think Raja had one lip sync win. And then Eureka O'Hara had one win, including a lip sync win. But she also was eliminated and then came back. So I think that, to me, she was like a distant fourth place, no reason to really be there. The final challenge was to write a verse for a country song. I thought Sonique's was the best. Raja's also was very good, but I just did not entirely, it wasn't my taste with the cadence of the rapping. And I'm just surprised that Ginger Minj didn't win. I thought they were kind of pushing her to win. I thought that she kind of had it in the bag. You know, she was on All Stars 2, and that's generally considered one of the best seasons of Drag Race. Definitely the best season of All Stars, let alone of Drag Race as a whole. And that was not that long ago. So I thought that bringing her back so soon was their way of being like, we're just going to hand her a win. So I'm kind of surprised they didn't. I am happy with Sonique's win. She, of those top fours who I was rooting for, she is the first trans winner of a U.S. Drag Race, which I think is great. There are so many trans drag artists working. So to see a trans winner in the Hall of Fame makes a lot of sense in representing the drag community in the States. So that's wonderful. And I thought she deserved it. She had a great finale. She had a great finale look. She had an incredible lip sync. She almost fell and caught herself and ended up tumbling out of it, which was wonderful to see. She had a good season because, like I said, even episodes she didn't win, I feel like she was definitely up there and could have taken it. So that was great to see. I was very happy with the outcome. What I was not very happy with was how much of the Drag Race fandom let the transphobia come out when Kylie won. And I know that a lot of people love to talk about how it's the white twinks who are the worst. That is true, but also not entirely my experience. When Monet Exchange won All Stars 4, most of the hate she was getting was from Spanish-speaking followers, people especially in South and Central America who were calling her the N-word and things like that. And then this time around, immediately following Kylie's crowning, like I was up in the middle of the night because I couldn't sleep that night, so I had it spoiled for me on Twitter. But immediately after she won at like 2:45 in the morning, East Coast time. So like this episode has been available for like minutes. So people literally just fast forwarded to the end to see who won. And there was a lot of transphobia, and it was from Black folks on Twitter. And I know that part of that is because they were rooting for Raja O'Hara and they were just hurt that their favorite didn't win. But you can root for your favorite without being transphobic. And I'm not going to reread some of those tweets, but I did share some of them on my Twitter account at Fake TV Critic. If you would like to go see how gross some of these people are, feel free. Okay, moving on. That was just a quick little recap because I wanted to touch on that. I was happy. Kylie Sonique Love, welcome to the Hall of Fame. What else? So I also watched this show on Netflix that all of Twitter was a buzz about called Clickbait. And I had heard about it about a week before it debuted because Adrian Grenier was in it and Zoe Kazan, who I know and like as a playwright. I've read a few of her plays for the theater company I work at. We are considering producing one of them in a couple of years. So I know her as a playwright, kind of forgot that she was also an actress. So I was like, oh, so it's kind of in the back of my head that the show is happening. And then I was just randomly on Twitter and a bunch of people were saying how it was so amazing and it was, they never saw the end coming. And now I love mysteries. I read a lot of domestic mysteries, domestic thrillers that are kind of like in the Gone Girl vein. Things like, you know, Paula Hawkins and David Bell, Riley Sager. So I read a lot of these books. I find them, even when I don't like them, I find them fun to read. Like they're a good waste of time. So I watch a lot of shows like this. I watch a lot of movies like this. I read a lot of books like this. So I was like, okay, I have the time this weekend. This was maybe 2 weeks ago. I'm going to sit down and watch it. And it was 8 episodes, like 45 minutes a piece. It was a quick binge, right? I loved the first episode. It kind of started to fall apart the more we got into this large cast of characters. And I ended up hating the ending, whereas everyone else loved it. And I think it's just because most people are fucking stupid. Sorry about it. So Clickbait is about a guy who is kidnapped. And then a video of him goes viral of his kidnapping, saying that he abuses. And it says, I abuse women in this like placard that he's holding up. And then it says, at 5 million views, I die. And then a few days later, it hits 5 million views. The story goes viral. His body is found. So we need to find out. And that's like barely a spoiler. I think that happens in like episode 2, maybe. So we need to find out what happened to this. When was he kidnapped? Did the same person who kidnapped him kill him, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. What's the story behind the I abuse women? Because he seems like a great guy. He works at a high school. He's a family man, you know, blah, blah, blah. The usual bullshit. And then he like is exposed that he like maybe has this really sordid past, is cheating on his wife, has multiple online partners and profiles. And there's like some shady shit with the girls volleyball team that he coaches at the private school he works at. And like it just spirals. And I'm going to spoil the end of this. So again, if you have not watched Clickbait, and you do not want to be spoiled, skip ahead like 5 minutes. Okay. Hopefully you did that. You get 3 more seconds. Okay. So the final episode is a stupid piece of shit. This is the worst written show mystery that I have seen in a very long time. And if you are obsessed with the show and you think it's a great ending, you are dumb. And let me tell you why. The great thing about mystery is why they are so much fun, especially these giant casts, is that we meet these people and then we need to figure out who did the crime, whatever it is, and why, right? It's not just a whodunit, it's a why done it. And that is the interesting thing, is like knowing that like over the course of a book, we've met these people or we've met these organizations, we need to figure out what is the connection? Okay. And in this particular show, there is a huge cast of characters. There's the wife. There's the two sons. There is a mistress. There's the sister. There's the mom. There is the friend at school. There's the receptionist at school. There is the all of these other people that he has met online, allegedly. There's the reporter, there's the detective, and all these people have secrets, right? So we're trying to figure out, okay, whose secret needs to be covered up? What is Nick, I think is the character's name Adrien Grenier plays, what is his secret? And we spend 8 episodes trying to figure out what is going on. And then when it finally comes down to this last episode, the who of the whodunit is someone we meet in the last episode. That is bad writing, especially for a mystery. We have dozens of characters that could have committed this crime, and many, if not all of them, had a reason to and a secret to hide. Why would you make the killer a brand new character? It doesn't make any sense. So when everyone on Twitter is like, I never saw the ending coming, because you literally could not see the ending coming, because you did not know this character existed until the end. That is bad writing. And on top of it, it didn't make any fucking sense. So we find out that Nick was not cheating. He did not have another mistress or fiance. This woman, the receptionist at the school, hacked into his computer and was living vicariously, having all these fake dating profiles with his picture. So she was having all these fake online relationships with all these women. And these women had it in their heads. They were dating, engaged to Nick or whatever his name was. I'm going to call him Nick. I don't know if that's his actual name. Sorry. I don't have the patience or the energy to look it up right now. And it got taken too far, basically. That's it. And then the kidnapper did not kill him. They let him go. And then he figured out that it was this receptionist bitch, went to her house, and the receptionist bitch's husband, who we do not meet until this episode, kills him. Dumb. Fucking dumb. So bad. And so let me, if you think this is a great show, if you think the ending is good, you really need to watch something smart. Or read a fucking book. Because like Agatha Christie is rolling in her grave with this show. Do you know what I mean? Like for the people who have like gone above and beyond in the mystery genre to like make interesting twists and to hand twists that like are actually shocking because the information is there, but then you don't know what to do with it until the twist comes. That's a sign of a good mystery. And then there were none. Gone Girl. Like I didn't particularly like the book of Gone Girl, but there is a reason it basically like invented this genre of the domestic thriller, is because we had all the information. We just didn't know how it was all going to play out or what to do with it until the twist came halfway through that book or movie, if you only ever seen the movie. When you can't see the twist coming because you're not given the information, that's not a good twist. That is laziness. I'm going to get off my soapbox now. So that was Clickbait, which is on Netflix right now. And maybe you'll love it. I don't know. Like I said, the first couple episodes, I was drawn in. I liked it. But by the end, there were too many fucking characters. And then for the killer to be someone we didn't meet until like the last 30 minutes, fuck off. Fuck all the way off. No. Don't like it. Don't like it. Okay. So RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars Season 6 we talked about. We talked about clickbait. Next, I'm going to be talking about the premiere of Top Chef Family Style on Peacock. So stay tuned for that. So you would be forgiven for not knowing that this show even exists, because I don't think I've seen a single promo for it. It was promoted on Twitter or Instagram, really, or anything. And also, there are no reviews for it. But this past week, Peacock premiered a new spinoff of Top Chef called Top Chef Family Style. This was announced a few months ago, and it premiered September 9th with 2 episodes. And Peacock is dropping a new episode every Thursday for the rest of the season. And I don't really know why they are even bothering. So I like a lot of what Peacock does and has done since it launched. I think it does not really need to exist, and that's something that it needs to examine, that Universal needs to examine. But I like a lot of what they do, like I said. So their originals have not always been like must-see TV, but from what I've watched of them, they're decent. You know, I loved Dr. Death. If you watch one thing on Peacock right now, it should be that. It's Joshua Jackson, Alec Baldwin, Christian Slater, Anna Sophia Robb, Mamie Gummer. It's such a great show based on a great podcast, and it was really well done. It was really interesting, and it expanded upon the mythos of the podcast. So I highly recommend that. But then other than that, I mean, it's a bit like Below Deck Med is airing a week early on Peacock before it's on Bravo. And like, okay, great. Who gives a shit? They have Frogger, like a game show version of the video game that just came out. Andy Cohen hosted a show called X-Rated that I've watched a few episodes of, and again, is really interesting, but it's not exciting. Like, it's not really all that much fun. And it's about people who bring their exes on and they give them ratings based on things like their sex life and their self-confidence and stuff like that. So it's an interesting, like, psychological thing where, like, it's like therapy in a way, but that's not a really exciting show. And now we have Top Chef Family Style starting, and the show is dumb. And it's dumb for a few reasons. One is that it is hosted by Meghan Trainor, All About That Bass, Meghan Trainor, who it fully admits in the first episode that she does not know how to cook and is not a very adventurous eater. So like, what the fuck she is doing on the show, I do not understand. I mean, on one level, like, the whole concept of the show is a young family member, like a child, is paired in duos with an older family member. So, like, you know, there's mom and child, there's grandparent and child, there's father and son, there's older sister, younger brother, aunt and nephew. So, like, it doesn't have to just be, like, mom and son or whatever, but one of them is a child or a teen, and one of them is an adult. So, first of all, there are 26 people on this show. Because everything is in duos, there are 26 people on the show. 13 sets of 2. That's too fucking many people. Then you have Meghan Trainor, who like fully admits that she's not an adventurous eater. She's not a cook or a chef. And I don't really get why she's the host, because like, it's not like to me that she's like a famous or popular singer with kids. Like, I could understand if it was like, I don't know, like JoJo Siwa, that's a bad example, but like if it was JoJo Siwa or someone like her, or like, I don't know, who's like a TikToker or something. I don't know. I'm old. And then it's Marcus Samuelson, who is a very famous chef and has been on Top Chef and Top Chef Masters and the Food Network and all over the place. So I get him being there, but Meghan Trainor, like, why? Like, she admits in this episode that this is the first time she's ever had a mole. And I don't know, like, I'm not a hugely adventurous eater, but I know what mole is and I've eaten mole. It's weird. Anyway, I, as a rule, do not like kids on TV. I especially do not like kids on reality competition series. I think it does not end well for anyone, because first of all, kids think quote unquote elevated food is something that to most adults is not elevated food. And that was the challenge of the first episode, was to take a family recipe and quote unquote elevate it. And a lot of these kids were like, oh, well, I made pasta with spaghetti sauce and I elevated it by making my own pasta. And like, okay, yeah, that is elevated like over boxed pasta, but like making your own pasta is not that fucking elevated. Like a lot of people do it, and it's because you can literally make pasta dough out of flour and water. It's not great pasta dough, but you can do it. Otherwise, it's like maybe some olive oil, maybe some egg yolks, depending what you want your fat to be. And then you just pass it through a pasta maker a few times and boil it in water for a minute. Like it's really not a hugely complicated thing, or it just takes forever. And that's why people don't do it, including most professional Italian chefs. Regardless, so like there was one dish where we made stuffed shrimp with apricot sauce. Okay, well, what's the elevation? Well, normally we use store-bought sauce, but we're going to make our own. Like, ugh, okay, what's elevated about your pozole? Well, there's a lot of toppings. What's elevated about this soup thing? Well, I like color, so we made sure that all the toppings had a lot of color. Like, it's just stupid. And I'm sorry, but that's the problem with kids on TV, is that what they think is fancy is not fancy, but they think it's fancy because they're 9 years old. Do you know what I mean? Regardless, I mean, so this is a Top Chef spinoff that is not necessarily going for fancy. It is going for homey. And I can appreciate that. A lot of what I think does not work sometimes on regular Top Chef is that the style of food that they make is often very foreign or like unrealistic for people watching, for me in particular. I think I might have mentioned this when I was covering this past season of Top Chef, that sometimes these chefs will make food and I'm like, I literally couldn't tell you if this was good or bad because I don't know a single thing that is in this dish. I can't even picture what this tastes like. And that is both what I think makes Top Chef interesting and what I think makes Top Chef kind of unattainable and untouchable in a way as an audience member. Like watching Top Chef Family Style, I know what bolognese is. I know what chickpea curry is. I know what pozole is. I know what are some other things? Like I know what lamb chops are with mint sauce. I know what shrimp and grits are. I know what chips and dip are. Like I know what these things are. So I can imagine what they taste like. That is a good thing because I can more closely than on regular Top Chef kind of assume who should and shouldn't be doing well, but also like I don't really need to watch a show of people who are making shit that I make on a Wednesday night. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I do not need, like, one of the elevated dishes was a bechamel lasagna. That is just how my best friend makes her lasagna. Like when I go visit her in Ohio, when she makes her lasagna, she just makes bechamel. It takes 5 minutes. It's not complicated. So that to me is not really elevated. That's just how some people make their lasagna, is with bechamel. So like I make lasagna, well, not right now because I'm on a low carb diet. We don't need to talk about personal life, but I typically make lasagna like 10, 12 times a year, like usually around once a month on a Sunday. And it takes a couple hours just because the process is long. Like you cook the noodles, then you make the sauce and you make the filling and then you have to layer everything and then you have to bake it. So like it's time intensive, but it's not in any way difficult. So I don't know. I didn't find that particularly interesting. And like, again, I don't like kids on TV, not only because what they think of it as elevated, I don't find elevated, but also I feel like an asshole hating kids or not wanting kids to succeed. And that's the nature of the game on competition reality shows, is we're going to have our favorites and we're going to have our not favorites. And I feel like an asshole thinking like, oh God, please send this kid home. Do you know what I mean? Like, and on the same level, like a lot of the time I feel like the judges on shows with kids don't want to say bad things about the food because, like, I don't know, they don't want to hurt their feelings or they don't want them to like go away discouraged and like stop cooking or something. But I feel like they don't want to critique the kids. And also, these kids and these family members, they're not professional chefs. They're home cooks. So obviously they're making, that's why they're making things that I've heard of, because they're home cooks. So they're doing things wrong that I feel like are obvious. Like, there was one family who made a Pakistani curry, and Kwame from Top Chef this past season, and who competed a few years ago, was the guest judge. And he asked, did you toast the spices before you put them in the curry? And they said no. And like, to me, I am a white person who does not regularly make curries, but I've experimented with it a few times. And even I know that you toast the spices first. And I know that from like watching cooking shows. Like, I know that from watching Artie Sequeira. I know that from watching even fucking Rachel Ray does it. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's just, I feel like that's common knowledge. You toast the spices first. Like, even when I'm making chili, before you add any liquid, like, you cook the meat and you cook the veg, if it's like tomatoes or onions or peppers or like whatever you are putting in this particular version of chili, and then you add the spices and you toast them over heat and then you add liquid. So like, that is an obvious step that they just didn't do. Seasoning is another thing that, like, they said of one dish, and I don't remember what it was that it was lacking seasoning. But then they didn't say that to their face in the judging, or at least they didn't show it. And if that, like, they need to know this. They need to know that when you are cooking, you have to fucking salt your food. So I don't know. It's weird. There are too many people. Meghan Trainor, what are you doing there? I don't understand. And why does the show exist? Like, it's on Peacock for no reason. Like, Peacock did not promote it. They didn't even like pay to promote it on Twitter or something. Like, yesterday I watched this movie on Amazon called The Voyeurs, and the only reason I knew it existed is because on Twitter that day, Amazon paid to promote it. So I saw the hashtag as a paid promotion, and I ended up watching it. That's all Peacock needs to do, pay to promote this. That's all. But the only tweets I've seen from it, when you click on the Top Chef Family Style hashtag or type it into Twitter, is I've seen tweets from Marcus Samuelson. I saw tweets from Food & Wine Magazine, who I think are a sponsor because the prize in the first episode is a trip to the Food & Wine test kitchen. And Kwame, who again is the guest judge in this episode, is a chef at Food & Wine. So I feel like that's not, like, that's just a cross promotion thing. And that's it. Like, they either didn't send the episodes out for review, or no one chose to review it because there are no reviews on the internet. And I don't get it. Like, why did you just dump this? Why did you just dump this? And I know that Peacock is doing a lot of things to try to garner new subscribers. Like, and a lot of people did that over the summer with the Olympics. So did they dump this thinking like, oh, people will just now be using Peacock after the Olympics and they'll just see the show there and want to watch it? Because no. Like, when people think, oh, what should we watch tonight? They are probably going to go to Netflix, maybe HBO Max, maybe Amazon, and like maybe Hulu, maybe Paramount Plus. I mean, maybe. But like, I feel like Peacock is still way behind the ball on this. So they need to do things to get people to watch their shows, and just dumping them is not that thing. Like, next month, they just made a huge announcement this past week that they are going day and date with Halloween Kills, which is the newest movie in the Halloween franchise. So if you don't want to go to the theater, you can watch it on Peacock. Maybe that will draw new subscribers or new downloads to the platform or something. But why do this? Like, I don't know if Bravo was going to air this and then Top Chef Amateurs bombed, which it did. So they didn't want Top Chef Family Style. So they just put it on Peacock to like kind of make it disappear. I don't know. Like I said, it's not a great show. If you have nothing else to do, it is fine. If you like the Top Chef format, if you like the format of the kids cooking shows like MasterChef Junior or Kids Baking Championship, it's fine. But like, for me, who is just a Top Chef fan, I'm probably not going to continue watching this because there's no real reason to. Like, it's too simplistic. I don't like kids on TV. I don't particularly like the judges. I don't understand the judge. Like, I like Meghan Trainor as a singer, but why the hell are you judging the show or hosting the show or whatever? It makes no sense to me. So I don't get why the show exists, but it does. And no one else was reviewing it, so I thought that I should. So if you are interested, the first couple episodes of Top Chef Family Style are streaming now on Peacock, and new episodes are dropping every Thursday. Have fun. Okay, coming up this week, so we're wrapping up the summer TV season, starting to gear up for the fall TV season. On Monday, Hulu is releasing the first three episodes of its new sci-fi series, Why the Last Man, which is based on a comic book series about like all the men in the world getting wiped out because they have Y chromosomes or something like that. So it's starring Diane Lane and Maren Ireland and Amber Tamblyn and Elliot Fletcher, who is a trans man, which I'm really interested to see how they kind of play transness into this idea of the quote unquote last man. So the first three episodes of that are dropping on Hulu on Monday. Then Food Network is officially introducing us to spooky season when Halloween Baking Championship begins. Wednesday, we get the sixth season of Nailed It on Netflix. Thursday, the new BJ Novak series, The Premise, premieres. Peacock is releasing the first episode of a show I'm really looking forward to, the Dan Brown series of Robert Langdon, you know, the Da Vinci Code, Angels and Demons, Tom Hanks. So they're making a TV series, as I've mentioned on the podcast before, called The Lost Symbol. That first episode drops Thursday on Peacock. Paramount Plus is releasing a new adult animated series called The Harper House. The fifth season of Floribama Shore and the third season of Double Shot at Love with Pauly D and Vinny both premiere on MTV. On Friday, the very highly awaited to some people who actually have Apple TV Plus, second season of The Morning Show premieres, and the entire third season of Sex Education drops on Netflix. On Saturday, HBO Max is doing something real stupid, and they're releasing podcast that you can only watch slash listen to on HBO Max, which makes no sense to me. So it's not a TV series. It's a podcast, but you can only access it by like watching it on your TV, or I guess listening to it on your TV. Like there's nothing to watch. It's just going to be a title card. And then you're going to listen to a Batman podcast. It's called Batman, The Audio Adventures. And Saturday is Batman Day, and I'm kind of interested because the cast is great. Like Jeffrey Wright is Batman, and then like Alan Tudyk is in it, and some others. And this just doesn't make any sense to me. Like I get that HBO Max and DC have a partnership, but like why would you not also release it as a like actual podcast? But regardless, that comes out on Saturday. And then on Sunday, the Emmys are on CBS, and Food Network begins Halloween Wars. For finales, again, we're wrapping up some summer TV. So American Ninja Warrior is over on Monday. Hell's Kitchen and Lego Masters finish out their seasons. The third season of Miracle Workers, which is that weird Daniel Radcliffe, Steve Buscemi show on TBS, which this season was the Oregon Trail, that ends. The ABC game shows are all coming to an end. Press Your Luck, $100,000 Pyramid, and Celebrity Family Feud. America's Got Talent has its season finale. The Burden of Truth on the CW ends its season. The first season of Surreal Estate on Sci-Fi comes to an end. The very last episode, the series finale of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, airs on NBC on Thursday. And then Fox's Very Bad, No Good, Horrible reboot slash remake slash sequel to Fantasy Island ends its first round of episodes on Sunday with a special episode. Okay, my recommendation for the week is The Other Two. I can't remember if I've mentioned this series on the podcast before. The first season aired almost 3 years ago on Comedy Central. It's Drew Tarver and Helene York and Molly Shannon, Ken Marino. Like, it's a great character actor, improv actor, comedic cast. And Drew Tarver and Helene York play two siblings who live in New York, Carrie and Brooke Dubeck, and they're both like trying to survive in the city, but also to like quote unquote make their dreams come true. And in the first season, their 13-year-old brother goes viral for writing a really terrible song called I Want to Marry You at Recess. So their brother becomes famous, and then it's about them like being peripherally famous while also trying to like come up with their own identities and like survive in the world as themselves. And the first season was fucking hysterical. I loved the first season when it aired, and it got renewed for a second season that like never materialized. And then a year later, during the pandemic, it got pushed over to HBO Max, but then they hadn't filmed the second season still, and they did that earlier this year. So now HBO Max is finally airing the second season, again, almost 3 years after the first season aired. So it's the second season is airing in two episode chunks every Thursday on HBO Max. This coming week is going to be the release of episodes 7 and 8. And then next week are the two final episodes of season 2. But the first season and all the episodes up till now are currently streaming on HBO Max. I highly recommend them. It's so funny. It has some great guest stars. Drew Tarver is so fucking funny. I can't deal with it. He plays, Carrie is a gay man who in the second season, because of his famous brother, like, is kind of, again, like, on the verge of fame and doing, like, these really kind of demeaning hosting gigs, which is also funny to me because, like, as a gay person who follows gay culture, this is what we get. Like, we don't, like, we used to have Logo and everyone thought that was a big win because we had this, like, niche cable network that barely showed anything but, like, Drag Race documentaries and reruns of The Golden Girls and Will and Grace. And now I don't even know if Logo still exists as a TV station because I don't get it on my cable package. So, but the last I checked, like, literally it was all sitcom reruns. There was no original programming. They used to do, like, news and music. Logo is how I discovered so many of my still to this day favorite artists, like Tom Goss and Jay Brannon and Ryan Amador and all of these amazing gay artists that I still follow. And, like, RuPaul's Drag Race obviously came from Logo. And but now it's all, like, on apps. Like, you have, like, Grindr and Scruff, like, having original content, and even, like, on straight apps, like, Snapchat has TV shows on it. Like, what the fuck? But it's funny to me that that, like, he's getting these chicken shit hosting gigs that, like, are 2 minute, 5 minute segments on these, like, ridiculous gay sites and apps and stuff. So I thought that's funny. He is in a relationship at the beginning of the season with a wonderful Broadway actor named Gideon Glick, who is so funny. And they revisit a storyline from season 1 while they're upstate apple picking for a weekend. It's just, it is so relatable on so many levels of, like, Drew comes to a realization where he's like, I'm 30 and I've seen, like, 4 dicks. I need to see more dicks. Like, I don't want to settle down before I've seen more dicks. And, like, that to me is just, it's fucking funny. And maybe you don't find that funny, but if that sounds funny to you, you'll love the other two. And then Helene York is hysterical as Brooke. Molly Shannon is a regular the second season, and she plays their mom, who becomes famous for hosting, like, an Oprah-esque talk show. I love it. It's absurd, but still grounded. It's hysterical to me. If you have been on the internet during the pandemic and you like Meg Stalter, who has been, like, who did during Pride the, hi, gay, we are rounding up and sashaying away with deals about the butter commercial. If you loved that video, you will love the other two. And I don't know anybody who didn't love that video. So the other two, season 1 is currently streaming in full on HBO Max. And the second season is currently airing. We'll wrap up next week, which is what, like, the 23rd or 24th or something on HBO Max. I highly recommend it. Go check it out. All right. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this week's episode, our first official episode, our. I'm acting like there are a million of you that listen to this podcast. It's like 20 of you, and I know most of you. Welcome back. Yay. Fall TV is heating up. I'm going to experiment maybe potentially with the format of this podcast of, like, maybe instead of, like, commenting on one or two shows in depth, I'll, like, touch on a whole bunch of shows that I'm watching. Who knows? So if shit changes, don't yell at me. I apologize. And you will yell at me because, again, I know most of you. So thank you for tuning into this episode of Fake TV Critic. I'll be back next week with more news, more recaps and analysis, and more reviews and recommendations. Have a good week, everyone.